7 o'clock. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Morning Review. The planet that we're leaving for future generations, could we reimagine a better world for our children? Can we as a collective strive to leave our children a safer, a more peaceful, a more prosperous, a more climate resilient earth than the one that we inherited? And this week we reflect on World Children's Day, and I ask that we do all we can to improve children's lives and welfare, not just here in South Africa and Africa, but around the world. And so we have in studio today Christine Muigano, who is the UNICEF's representative, South Africa representative, here live in studio, going to be talking to us about meeting and looking at children's projects here in Cape Town, but also going to be reflecting on the status of children around the world. Christine, thanks so much for joining us here on the Morning Review. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
We have in this country a crisis of youth, of an unemployment rate of 74.8% of youth between the ages of 14 and 15 and 24. It's young people who have either not in school or have not been able to be absorbed in the job market. And we often ask the question, are we a ticking time bomb? What is going to be the outcome of a restless, bored, unstimulated, and impoverished youth in South Africa? And I think this is something that not just South Africa is dealing with, but other developing countries as well.
Absolutely. But hopefully, and the word hope is important, we're not dealing with a negative energy, but positive energy with these young people. As you said, that unfortunately are not always either in school, in training, or in employment. So what we're doing as UNICEF, with the rest of the United System as well, organizations such as ILO, those working on environment, others like the United Nations Population Fund, with our partners, making sure that we have an education system that doesn't end up, you know, with children getting out of school without the skills, without the knowledge, without the civic engagement that you would want society to have. So working with the Department of Basic Education in this country to build a meaningful school system. And then, as you said, for those, unfortunately, who cannot be in school, who are out there in communities, making sure that we give them the skills, we bring them some training out of school, in collaboration, for example, with the private sector, so that they can have a meaningful transition from where they are in their communities to earning, to, you know, being positive participants, contributors to their community. So it's about connecting these young people. For example, now with COVID-19, we made sure that they could be engaged in provision of water to communities where it wasn't available, building very simple devices that allow people to wash their hands. And in the meantime, being able to earn something through that kind of engagement in the community.
Earlier this week, we had a conversation with business owners, and saying that despite our high youth unemployment rate, many of them have offered young people jobs, but many of them never stay long in them because they want to seek other opportunities. And we had some young people on air And they said, well, the minds of young people have largely opened up, particularly over COVID-19, saying that there is the need for employment and to sustain themselves, but the aspirations of young people are there. There's the aspirations of we want bigger things, we are striving for bigger things. Also, many raised issues of we're far more aware of an economic system, global economic system, that doesn't necessarily benefit us. So the last 2 years has really opened not only the general workers' mind, but also children's minds and young people's minds of wanting to eke out not only a better life, but a better world. And we're starting to see that of children questioning economic systems, capitalism, of whether workplaces and industries are sustainable or not. And I think that is a, if we talk about silver linings, that's one of them, of young people seeing that there is a better world possible for them.
Absolutely. And one of the things that came out of a poll that we did of young people around climate change and, you know, COP26 was that they were hopeful. Those young people who were polled and who are engaged in this space were saying, we see hope in a green economy. So an economy that's different from what we have today, an economy that is more just, an economy that pinpoints, you know, who is actually responsible for much of the disaster that we see in climate change today. It's you know, people and countries and communities in the South suffering from a greater impact for something that's actually originating elsewhere. So they see hope in being part of a discussion around a greener economy, a juster economy, and seeing something positive, hopefully, coming out of that. You know, they look at the potential of agriculture, which is not normally something that, you know, young people in developing countries would aspire to work in tourism, and yeah, in the green economy in general.
Is there also a questioning by young people of old world capitalism, looking at either changing economic systems altogether or what's been called sustainable capitalism? Is I'm very, very buoyed by young people having these conversations of how even now they're seeing very, very complex market systems and economic systems. That means that young people are considering a sustainable financial world where there is a level of social justice and is a level of economic and income equality. That is very, very positive.
It is indeed, and that's probably a conversation that you would want to have with those young people, no? As opposed to me, who's probably at the margins of these kinds of conversations. But yes, we are. It's rewarding for us to work with some of these youth advocates, volunteers who are in universities and engaged in debates in ways that, you know, you feel that they want to be. They aspire, as you said, to, you know, different things, but they're close enough to the communities of the countries in which they live to see that, you know, the transformation, the changes need to benefit children of Khayelitsha, of Atlantis, where we will be tomorrow, as opposed to this being about, you know, philosophical or conceptual you know, intellectual debates that you can find in universities. You know, these
children love those experiences.
They're grounded in you know, in places, in situations where you don't have water. You've seen the impact of COVID-19 sort of face to face every day in your countries. South Africa is one of the most impacted countries by with, you know, COVID-19. So it compels these young people to ask, you know, the questions about, you know, how and why, and you know, how can we be a meaningful part of finding solutions to what's happening in our communities, in our countries.
There is the principle of 1,000 days. That talks of 1,000 days from conception all the way into birth to into a child's life, which impacts on their trajectory, the overall state when they become adults, when they join the job market, and how all that impacts based on nutrition, stimulation, education. The impact of early childhood development, ECDs, around the world and here in South Africa. Is there enough attention that looks at the first 1,000 days of the South African child's life that has a major impact on where they end up, where they land, the economic status, the employment status, the employability. And I think that has to be a very, very great photo. South Africa pays a lot of attention to its matric pass rate, about how many matric passes South Africa has. And I don't think South Africa pays enough attention to how many children we're putting into ECD, early childhood development, at an early stage, which ultimately sets the tone for the rest of their lives.
Actually, when you look at the figures, the data, a country such as South Africa is actually at the forefront of what's happening in this space, in at least in Africa. I understand that the country has come a long way since 1994 in investing in ECD. More, of course, needs to be done. But the attention, I believe, is there, so much so that there's also reflection on where such an investment should sit in terms of, you know, who manages it, who leads it. It used to be mainly a portfolio that's led and sits in the Department of Social Development.
And now being moved to basic education.
A recognition that, you know, the learning component of it is important. Yes, it's good to have children in kindergarten. It's important to for them to have the right nutrition, the right stimulation from caretakers, caregivers, and parents, but also this the importance of it being related to learning by playing, and the transition into education very important. So it's about nutrition. It's about the care that the children are provided in their immediate environment. But it's also about health, you know, the connection to all the health care that a child should be given in the early stages, the immunization and all of that, this full package. And I have to say what I see in South Africa is promising in terms of the attention and the investment that's going in there. We can always do more or better. And as UNICEF, this is one of our main focus in the cooperation, of the program of cooperation that we have with the government of South Africa and with also civil society partners.
It would be remiss of us to talk about young people without including young people into this conversation. Chloe Johnson is a facilitator at the Molo Sungulolo Young Women's Forum. She's based in Atlantis, and you're going there tomorrow, and I'm quite sure that you'll interact with her in person. Chloe Johnson, thanks so much for joining us here on the Morning Review. How are you doing?
Thank you for having me. I am doing well.
Awesome. Talk about very, very weighty theoretical conversations about the well-being of children, young people in South Africa. But you, of course, and other children in South Africa, more than half of our population in South Africa, children love these experiences. I'd like to know from a young person's point of view, how do you feel about your place in dictating the conversation and setting the agenda about the issues that affect children in South Africa?
I have to say, if it wasn't for organizations such as Molo Sungulolo that actually encourage children to raise their voices, I feel like I wouldn't have played as big of a part as I have, simply because children don't always have the platform. It isn't always available to them, and in cases where it is, people don't take it seriously. People I have children there for show, just to say that they are included, but the points are not taken to heart. So yeah, I think the joining up with organizations that decided, you know, we want to partner with children so that children can have a say in what is happening around them, what is happening in Parliament regarding the children, regarding their rights, that played a key part in my activism.
What do you think is the most pressing issue that's affecting young people in South Africa at the moment? Is it unemployment? Is it education? Is it simply having a platform to have your voice heard?
I think it's an amalgamation of all of us. And I think that poverty is one of our biggest issues. I had a workshop earlier in the month with a couple of kids. And one of the points that came out was, poverty sometimes breeds violence, and out of that violence we get gangsterism, we get people breaking down, we get kids not being able to go to school. So then it is an impact on the education, it is an impact on the safety. So these are the type of things that all link upwards. So from my side, I think poverty is one of the main issues and the main struggles that is preventing us from moving forward.
Christine, the connection between the discussion that we're having globally on climate change, and particularly affecting the most poor and vulnerable, the face of the victim of climate change is particularly someone from a developing country, mm-hmm. particularly is a young person, and is more particularly a woman, would be a young female person, and would probably be the most hardest hit by climate change, Christine.
Yes, absolutely. So when we look at the impact of climate change, and more, you know, specifically as we heard it from the poll we had here in South Africa, it's, as you said, a young girl whose education would have been disrupted, for example, by floods, or the pandemic as we saw it now. A young girl who doesn't have access to water in a school, which cuts down on the number of days that she would be in school, because, you know, biologically there are times when you absolutely need to be in a place where you can have access to water as a girl. It's about, you know, being hungry, drought, and, you know, access to services being cut, and we know that, you know, when a family is under stress, it's usually either a woman or the young girl in the family who will stay behind. She will not go to school because, you know, there's things to be done in the house. So when there is stress, when there is distress in a community, in a family, it's usually or it's often the younger girls who bear the, you know, the greatest impact, adverse impact.
Thebelo Molisana is with the South African Youth Climate Action Plan. She's a law and politics student at Rhodes University. You gathered, or you joined virtually for the COP26 conference that was held recently. Lots of talk of the dissatisfaction of the old world not paying enough attention to a climate crisis that young people like you and others will inherit. You were a delegate there, particularly looking at climate action. Are you satisfied that today's leaders have paid enough attention to the transition to carbon neutral environments, leaving a sustainable world for future generations?
Thank you for the question, and thank you for having me. So I think looking at it from a very intersectional basis, you want to be very considerate of the developing countries and the plight that they face in overcoming economical challenges that they didn't necessarily inherit on their own part, but because of their pre-colonial history. The argument that was made constantly at COP was constantly for the global north or the west, so to say, to give assistance to these developing countries, since they are some of the world's largest emitters, such as India. They've targeted goals like 2050 and 2070, which we know can't be sustained. I mean, recently in Delhi, the air is too toxic that they've had to shut down schools and universities. Mm. So on one hand, you're very empathetic to the plight that they face. And on the other hand, you just realize that they simply don't have enough time. During COP, we also hosted a ripple effect forum on the 8th of November, where we presented to world leaders and to other delegates and activists in the green zone, where people from all walks of life could stream in and watch to see the impact that South Africa and the UK have on two different parts of the spectrum, where on one hand, there's a country with floods and another with drought. And on one hand, you think one has more economical power to overcome their challenges. And it just, you can just really see the intersectional challenges that each country faces, and that no matter how much money each one of us has, the ripple effect really is there, and that every step we might take makes a difference.
Tabelo, there's the argument that young people need to be politically involved to have to effect political or policy change. We've just been through an election now. We've seen a very, very low youth turnout. We had 1 million young people who are eligible to vote not participating. What is it you think is the youth's responsibility to remain politically active, even though they may not currently have faith in a current political system? As a politics student as well, your thoughts on that?
What's really interesting about it, though, is that I think people think of politics as this very hard and fast, complex topic, where it really does affect everyday life and every facet. It affects your entertainment, to the conversations that you have, to sports, to where you're born. So it's not something that you can ever avoid. And I think in that way, if people think of it more as a very social topic and something that you should invite into your household just to manage a very diverse and inclusive system, it would be easy for you to then be able to say you're political. Being political doesn't always mean that you're on the very radical end of things or that you're violent. And there's nothing wrong with being radical, and there's nothing wrong for standing up for what you think. But given the political climate that we're in now, and the whole, you know, conversation that the whole debate that we have with Miss SA and just all those kinds of conversations, the fact that youth are invited to speak about things like that, the fact that we speak about which languages we want to have at school, the fact that we speak about should climate change be in the education curriculum, those are political issues. Because if you think about it, not 25 years ago, we didn't have a place to really have a voice. We didn't have a place to really have a say in what was happening. So in that way, to get involved in climate change is a political statement. And it doesn't mean that it's negative, and it doesn't mean that you're in any way sort of going against your certain belief system, since I understand that some people don't want to be politically inclined. You just have to understand that if you're a fence sitter, or if you're someone that's complacent, it often means that you're giving in to a system. And in that way, you might be giving in to your own oppression.
Christine, there's a song by The Who that says the kids are all right. Judging from what you've heard now in the meetings that you will have and the facilitations with young people this weekend here in Cape Town, you believe the kids are all right? Kids are clued in. Kids are taking a stand for a better future, a better world that they want to see.
Yes, if you ask them, actually, a majority of them are hopeful, are positive, are engaged. But what we need to do as adults, as institutions, as communities, is to make sure that days such as today are actually what's happening every day, a day for children, with children, a day when we're listening, a day when we tell them that they are important. Mm. They have the knowledge, the capacity to actually have an impact on what's happening around them, because they know what's happening. They have a strong sense of how things are impacting them and what can be done to change some of the situations in which they are. So we just need to be there listening and they should be okay. And we have to make sure that they will be okay, that they are okay today and they will be okay tomorrow.
Christine Muigana, the UN's UNICEF representative to South Africa, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your time here in Cape Town. I hope you have fruitful discussions. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having us.
And just after 11 o'clock, apologies to Regan Thor, but coming up for Eyewitness News, remember, Lester Texter up next here on The Morning Review.